2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Ever snore so loud it registered as an earthquake, or you woke up with a throat as dry as the Sahara Desert and a headache that could stop a locomotive? Well, I've had all of these because I have sleep apnea. Hi, I'm Scott Mitchell. Yep, I wear a machine plugged into a wall attached to a hose every night. Sound Sleep Medical changed all of this for me, and they can do that for you. They specialize in providing oral appliance therapy for individuals suffering from sleep disorders. In many cases, oral appliances have proven to be as effective as CPAP machines in treating sleep apnea. The lack of sleep is a serious health risk and has been linked to heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and even depression. The oral appliance I got from Sound Sleep Medical has freed me from a hose. I can go anywhere, and I've never slept better. Call Sound Sleep Medical today. Seriously, for a limited time, the first 25 people that call get a free consultation worth $200. Call 801-783-5451. It's 801-783-5451.
All right, welcome into another edition of Jazz Notes. My name is Cleon Wall. Jeremiah Jensen is here. We haven't talked for about a week. There wasn't really much to talk about because the Jazz didn't play till Friday.
There is now.
But there is now, yeah. Jazz going to be playing again on Wednesday night against the Los Angeles Clippers, 1-1 over, I guess you could say, the weekend. Yeah. Short weekend for the Jazz, too. They play in Oklahoma City. By the way, that was a fantastic game.
It was one of the best NBA games of the season.
Yeah. It was so much fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And whatever you want to say about Paul George, I was just impressed with how well he played in that game, and I was impressed with his game winner. To be able to split the defense of Ricky Rubio and I think it was Jay Crowder, wasn't it? Split that and then throw a floater up over Rudy, that takes a lot of guts, but he knew what he was going to do. He got to the place he needed to go, and he made the winning shot. You could say all you want about, oh, if this could have happened, if Ricky wouldn't have turned the ball over so much, if Donovan wouldn't have shot so poorly, or whatever you want to say. It was a fantastic game. Even after all of that, the Jazz were still in the game and almost won.
Yeah, Paul George, I'll start with Paul George. Man, he's playing at an MVP level. And that game was a perfect example of why he should be considered for the MVP award. 45 points, and his team needed every one of those points at home against a really good Jazz team. The degree of difficulty on that game-winning shot is just off the charts. I mean, he had to lob that thing up 15 feet in order for it to go down 10, you know what I mean? So for that to hit and for them to survive that game was a lot. I mean, he deserves a lot of credit for that. He's just a terrific player. As far as the Jazz go, it was a gut punch loss, and it's one of those losses that you don't forget during the season because you have the chance to win on the road against a very, very good team. You are in control. You're up 7 points with 2 minutes left, and you can't get it done. You can't close, and then you have your chances in overtime, and you can't get it done. And then they have their chance, and they get it done. They send you home a loser. It hurts. It really does hurt. And those games, especially with that being pretty much a tiebreaker situation, it's pretty much going to give a tiebreaker to Oklahoma City because they're up 2-0 in the series.
I think 3-0 now. I thought they were up 3-0.
I think they've only played twice.
Oh, I thought they'd played three. I thought they played three.
Have they played three already this year?
I thought that was game number three.
You could be right. I don't remember.
I got to look
two.
While you're talking, I got to look now.
Go ahead and confirm that while I break that down. But the concerning thing in that game was not being able to close and turnovers. The Jazz struggle, especially against better competition, teams that are very aggressive defensively and taking care of the basketball. It's been a problem at different points in the season. And obviously, then the conversation goes to Ricky Rubio, and that was not his best game of the year, and Ricky was poor in that game. And had he not turned over the ball as many times, maybe it's a different result. And that's just, you know, it's one game. I mean, and people like to hammer Ricky for whatever reason. But that was a game that hurt, and they need more from Ricky Rubio. And then he turns around the next night to give him credit. Once you criticize, you have to give him credit when he does do well. He played terrific against Dallas, lights out, zero turnovers. He was one of the best players on the floor that night, and he helps lead the Jazz to a win. So you're going to have those times and nights. Some will look at that Oklahoma City game as a game where to criticize Ricky. But at the same time, you got to look at the Dallas game to praise him, because he was one of the reasons why they were able to win that game. Second out of a back-to-back, a lot of tired legs. You could see it. They kind of struggled through that game.
Yeah.
And finally, in the fourth quarter, it was interesting that the Jazz were the team that kind of broke free in the fourth quarter. Joe Ingles deserves a lot of credit for that, his hot shooting. But, you know, Ricky Rubio is kind of become a lightning rod. And, you know, he was on the trade block, and we all know everything, all the stories, the hot and cold. Last year he was terrific at the end of the year, but he struggled for the first half. Seeing the same thing again here, some inconsistent play. And I think Ricky's getting a little frustrated with some of the criticism. I kind of sense that.
Yeah, I can understand why. Now, let me go back to previous Jazz Notes podcast.
Okay.
When last we joined the Jazz Notes. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, when we talked about trade rumors with Ricky and everything, I said that I kind of came out and said, well, I think Ricky probably should be traded. I didn't like the trade that they were going to do, but I kept saying that I think he's probably going to be gone at the end of the season. But then you have a game like against Dallas, and I'm sure Jazz fans would say, well, we'd like to see a little bit more of that. There's another quadrant of Jazz fans, by the way, who would probably say, we're happy with Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
I love Ricky, by the way. Ever since he came here, it's just a consistency issue. As long as you know that scoring-wise, he's not going to be the most consistent guy. He's one of those guys that he's going to have a good scoring game like once every three or four games, and he's not going to shoot well the other games. But you love it when he comes alive, especially against, you know, Dallas, and we've seen him come alive against other teams. I think Ricky fits well on a team that would have two really good shooters paired up with him. One other guy could probably be a playmaker too, but at least two good shooters on his team. And it makes me think, Jeremiah, what would it have been like if Gordon Hayward would have signed? And I know we've gone back and we said, you know, what would it have been like if Gordon Hayward and Donovan Mitchell played? Okay, I think we've kind of all come out and said, would Donovan have even played or had a chance to play if Gordon Hayward and Joe Ingles are there, who would have been your two wings? But if you don't bring the Donovan equation into it and just say, what it would have been like if Ricky would have been on that team with those two guys who are two pretty darn good shooters from the outside, would this team have been better? And I think that's the kind of team he needs to be on, whether that's the Jazz or another team. I think he needs to be on a team with two to three good shooters, because he does so many things well to run that offense, even if he's not always dribbling the ball. When he eventually gets the ball, most of the time, I know eight turnovers the other night against Oklahoma City, most of the time, he makes the right pass. He makes the right move, and he does the right thing. And I just think that he needs to be on a team. I don't know if that's going to be the Jazz, because I look at Donovan Mitchell, and we'll talk about this in a second. He's not the most consistent shooter that you have out there. Joe Ingles is not having as good a year as he did the year before.
That's true.
Derek Favors is out there, and he's not an outside threat at all. But he's great as a backup center. And then you bring Jay Crowder into the mix, and he's not really a good shooter. If Ricky could get on a team with two good shooters around him at all times, that would be fantastic. And I think he would really thrive on a team or an offense just like that.
So in the offseason, he's probably going to be looking for that team, because, I mean, it's tough. It's always tough when you're analyzing players, because you get feelings mixed in. And, you know, I've had a chance to do stuff with Ricky, and I've seen him up at the Huntsman Cancer Institute, and I've seen the great things that he's doing in this community that maybe fans don't get to see. He's an incredible human being, and the community here is very fortunate to have him. You look at it from a basketball standpoint, and the Jazz are going to have a very tough decision to make this offseason on Ricky Rubio. Would they like to have him back? I think so. What kind of role would they want him to play if he came back? Would they want him to be their starting point guard moving forward? How much money would they be willing to pay him, and how much money would he be willing to do the job for? All those things are going to come in. It's business. And that's the hard part about this. It is a business, and the Jazz are going to have to make a business decision in the offseason. Ricky's going to have to make a business decision in the offseason, and it may mean that they go in a different direction. I think that you mentioned the trade deadline. I liked the deal if it would have been Ricky for Mike Conley. I think Mike Conley is exactly what the Jazz need, is somebody who takes care of the basketball, who's a three-point shooting threat, who has a veteran presence that takes the pressure off of Donovan Mitchell or Joe Ingles or anybody else on the team to handle basketball. They need a steady point guard on this team, a consistent point guard. And Mike Conley, there's a reason why he makes $30 million a year, because that's exactly what he is. He's not quite an all-star, but he's pretty darn close, and he's about as consistent as you get as a point guard. And that's why I think the Jazz were trying to make that move happen, and I think they may attempt to make that move again in the summertime. I think they really like Mike Conley. He's got Jazz DNA, as Dennis would like to say. So that point guard position is going to be a very interesting position to watch in the offseason. And then, of course, the X factor is Dante Exum. Where's he at in his development? Would the Jazz be able to plug him in as a starter next season if Ricky moves on? There's a lot of question marks about that position, but right now, between now and the end of this season, this is an audition for Ricky Rubio to keep that spot with this team and to earn a contract with Utah Jazz. We'll see how it pans out, and we'll find out the answer this summer.
And you mentioned all the great things he does in the community. Eric Woodyard of the Deseret News comes out with a story today basically saying how he handled the whole entire trade scenario and how he didn't stop from trying to help his foundation or kids in the community or whatever the case may be. Yeah, may have seemed like it would take a toll on him. But Ricky, and this was a story also on KSLSports.com, Zach Hicken wrote, you know, he has that fabulous game against Dallas, and he just basically comes out and says, eh, you have good games, you have bad games. He's not the most exciting interview in the world, but he's very consistent in what he says. He's not going to get too high and he's not going to get too low. You love that about it. Mm-hmm. And you love how he helps the community out. I just wonder how he and Donovan Mitchell fit next to each other. I still think that's going to be the big deciding factor. Can we be successful with these two guys sharing the backcourt together?
In today's NBA.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll have to, and by the way, I'm going to come out again. I really do like Ricky Rubio. If he could get on a team, and by the way, I was thinking about this. I'm like, what team could he go on where he would help their team out and they would still be able to thrive? If and I know this is going to sound wild, if for any reason Kyrie Irving decides to leave Boston, and there is a possibility, you know, maybe he goes somewhere else. He is a free agent next year too. If he goes somewhere and they don't make that trade for Anthony Davis and they keep most of those guys around, I think he'd be fantastic in Boston. I think there's enough offense around that in that team, and I think he would thrive under a Brad Stevens type of offense. No, he's not going to be the scorer that Kyrie is, but that may be a relief. Maybe it actually gets more people involved and maybe it makes that team better. I by the way, I have no inside information. I'm just saying, I was looking at all the teams. I'm like, who would he fit well on if he doesn't play for the Jazz next year?
The unfortunate thing is that maybe the Jazz aren't the right fit for him, and we'll have to see in the offseason.
Yeah, exactly. I brought up one other thing when we talked about that OKC game. I brought up, did Donovan Mitchell kind of shoot the Jazz out of the game in overtime? Going into overtime, Donovan was 12 of 25, so just under 50%. But then it got a little ugly in overtime. He was 1-for-7 in the first overtime and then 1-for-3 in double overtime. But let me put something to you. His first miss, he missed it. Rudy got the rebound and he dunked it. His sixth, when he made one shot and then he missed one right before the end of overtime. But again, Rudy got it and dunked it home. And then there was another, he missed a layup, but he actually got a layup. His very last miss, he missed it, but he got the offensive rebound. He shoved it out to Joe Ingles, who missed the three-pointer, and then Paul George comes down and hits the game-winning shot. Say what you want. As I kept watching him do this, I'm like, I wish he'd make them. But all I kept thinking is, I'm not sure I want anyone else on the floor taking those shots,
right?
Because who else is going to do that on offense?
Here's the debate. So I think, and I saw on Twitter while I was watching the game, this was going back and forth, and there were some fans criticizing Donovan Mitchell and his volume of shots. And my response to them would be, who else is going to take them? Who else in this team, especially in those clutch situations, is taking these shots? I mean, it's not that unusual for the star player on any team to have that kind of ratio of shots to shot makes. It's, sometimes they're good, sometimes nights they're not. And they wouldn't be in that game at all had Donovan not done what he did earlier in the game. Donovan was gassed. He's carrying the load offensively for this team, and he has been all season. This is a, we forget because he's so poised, he's so mature for his age, and he's just terrific. We forget how young and inexperienced he really is compared to somebody like a Paul George. Paul George, for instance, he made that clutch shot the other night. One of the biggest criticisms of Paul George for the first 7-8 years of his NBA career was he wasn't clutch. He couldn't make that shot. He was like 0 for like almost 20 in final second shots. And here he is, finally, after all that experience, it comes to this point now where he can make that shot and help his team get a win and play at an MVP level. It takes time. So this is all part of Donovan's process. He's learning a lot of things. And I thought it was good after the game. He tweeted live and learn. I mean, he's so wise, and I'm sure that Quinn talked to him after the game, and his assistant coaches talked to him after the game and pointed out this, and this that could have been done differently. You know, the last second shot he took in the first overtime, perhaps he could have got to the rim that game on that move. He just settled for the jump shot. Perhaps that's because he was tired and fatigued, but typically you see him attack the rim, and he had time to attack the rim. Maybe that would have been the best play. But if that shot goes in, we're not having this conversation.
Yeah,
the Jazz
exactly.
Win, one of the best wins they've had all year, and it's a completely different mood. So this is all part of Donovan Mitchell's growth process. This is part of the Jazz growth process as a franchise because there's no question he is the man moving forward. He's going to be a superstar in this league. You're going to have to let him go through this process, and you're going to have to go on the ride with him. Eventually, you're going to get to the point down the road where you're having moments like the Thunder had the other night when Paul George is making a game winner. Donovan's going to be making those plays. It's going to take time, though.
I remember when I was younger, and I remember when Michael Jordan came into the league, mm-hmm. and you know he was taking so many shots, and me as a teenager being dumb, I just kept thinking, you know, why is he taking so many shots? And eventually you just realize it's because he's the best player on the floor. Yeah. Now, he also came to learn to trust his teammates as years went along. But I think that's where you are with Donovan right now. You're just going to have to kind of take the lumps along with it. Yeah, you'd like to see Donovan pass a little bit more, but on the other hand, he is really your best scorer/playmaker on this team right now. So who else are you going to turn to in these situations? I love a lot of these other guys, but the only way that they're going to get the ball in these types of situations is if Donovan is passing it to them.
There's one other player on this roster that can go ISO, and he's not playing right now. It's Dante Exum. Other than that, this team has to play within a system. They have to try to get these teams in that blender. Ricky Rubio's got to try gnashing.
And that doesn't usually happen at the end of games. Usually it's...
The problem,
yeah.
Is you usually have to have one guy that can break down another guy to get you the look and get you the basket that you need. Sometimes running that offense out there isn't enough. We've seen a lot of times the shot clock runs out and they can't get a shot off. Well, in that situation, that can't happen. You got to get a good look. And so you're going to go to your guy, and Donovan's that guy. So that's kind of how it works. And you saw Paul George was the guy for the Thunder. It worked out for him. So, yeah. Who else is going to do it? I mean, that's how this team is built right now. There's not another guy. Donovan's the guy. So give him these opportunities. If he misses, it sucks. But then, you know what? He's going to be better for it, and he's going to maybe make that shot next time he has a chance.
And what happens the very next game? He shoots very efficiently, mm-hmm. scores 25 points. He and Ricky Rubio score 25 points apiece. He's having fun with Ricky in back of him during the post-media
showing
interview.
Showing us just a PSA on how important it is to moisturize after a shower.
Exactly. And thank you for bringing that up. No,
don't forget.
Gentlemen out there, make sure that you moisturize.
Yep.
And I think that... That's the kind of guy you like having on your team. It's not that he doesn't have a conscience. It's just that he seems to, and Ricky to some part, they seem to be able to move past bad games. It's okay. They know there are 82 games in the season. You're going to have bad games. They had a bad game against Oklahoma City, and they still almost won. So they know that that's going to happen. But I think that's just, you know, like you said, it's the growth process. You're going to mm-hmm. have to put up with some clunkers down the stretch. From Donovan Mitchell. And then you're going to have great games against teams like Dallas, and maybe he has another one against the LA Clippers. He's the guy moving forward, so I don't really think you can question him, and he would probably even question himself.
Oh, he certainly does. Absolutely. He's his biggest critic. I guarantee you that.
Rudy Gobert, though, offensive presence. I've always said, well, the one criticism I have about Rudy is that Rudy can't get his own shot But that's okay because he does so many other good things well. And he has developed offensively. I saw this tweeted out earlier today that Rudy Gobert, all right, no, I thought I saw it in, I think it was ESPN's power rankings. Mm-hmm. And they do a little blurb about each team. And they said about Rudy, they said when he is on the floor, the Utah Jazz score 109 points per 100 possessions. And that means that he is the best on the team right now. The best. And it helps when all of your shots, not all of your shots, that's bad. But a lot of your shots are dunks. I mean, he's leading the league in field goal percentage. But that's the advantage you have. So you have to take care of that advantage. No one else is coming close to that. When he is not on the floor, the Jazz are scoring 102 points per 100 possessions. So you see how valuable Rudy is right now. Yeah, it'd be nice if he had a Kareem skyhook, but I don't see Rudy doing that. I'd be even happy with a jump hook every once in a while. But you know what? He is so close to the basket, and his offense has improved so much. I remember talking to someone here at KSL the other day, and they said, you know, do you really need Rudy Gobert? And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Not just for defense and for how many points he saves on that end. But he is such a weapon now, and ball screens, too. He's such a weapon now on offense. You don't want to give that guy up right now.
No, you're dead on, and it's great you're bringing that up because I don't think Rudy Gobert gets enough credit for what he does for this team offensively. We all look at him as the defensive player of the year, and the shot blocking and the altering of shots and his ability to even guard guys one-on-one at the center position. So we focus all on defense with Rudy, but you have to give him credit for what he's done offensively, his development offensively. And sure, you don't want him out there taking elbow jumpers. That's not his game, and it doesn't need to be his game. He's probably one of the best ball screeners in the league. They do keep a stat for screen assists, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm not prepared for this podcast, apparently.
That's okay.
I think he's well up there if he's not number one in screen assists in the league.
I think he is. Yeah, I agree.
So
it's like over six.
Yeah.
I think they're averaging. Yeah, I think it's over six right now, screen
assists. He's just terrific in screen assists. He helps space the floor with what he's able to do. And he's so good around the rim now. You know, earlier in his career, he had a hard time catching it and finishing. He's gotten a lot stronger in his base, so his legs are stronger so he can finish better. He can hold his ground better. He's just terrific around the rim, and that's all you need from him. And he does all these other things offensively that allows the rest of his teammates to thrive. And, you know, if you miss a bucket, he's got a pretty good chance of getting an offensive rebound and a putback dunk. So that helps your offense as well. So we don't talk enough about Rudy Gobert's contribution to this Jazz offense, which, by the way, is on fire right now. The Jazz, in six of their last eight games, have scored 125 or more points. And I think against the Warriors, they had 110 or 115. I mean, their offense is really flowing right now. It's moving. They're getting up and down the floor. I really like what they're doing offensively. And as their defense continues to get better, I mean, you're looking at a team that's, you know, once that offensive rating continues to go up and the defensive rating stays there, all of a sudden you're elite again, just like they were at the end of last year. That's where they're trying to get, and I think they can get there. That's where they're at right now, and I think that the offensive production that they have currently, Rudy Gobert deserves more credit than maybe he gets.
A couple of quick hits before we get out of here on the Jazz Notes podcast. Big deal that Joe Ingles is now the NBA's leading Iron Man with 281 straight played games.
Apparently not. Joe does not care. He doesn't even follow it. He doesn't even know what the – he kind of got – Joe's funny. He wasn't really that surly, but he was having fun with the media, kind of making it act like, why are you even asking me about this? This is silly.
And I understand. It's still three-plus seasons. That's pretty darn
good.
Hey,
in today's NBA, if you have more consecutive games than everybody else, man, when I'm negotiating a contract, I'm bringing that up.
Yeah, exactly.
No doubt. So it does matter.
Okay, last thing. We talked about last time, Jeremiah. I mentioned to you how... you know, what are the most interesting teams?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious. I know we still got plenty of games left. Is there a team in the East that you can think that can beat Golden State?
No.
Wow. Uh-uh. And there we go. And
nope.
And we're done with the Jazz.
And we're
fest.
Done here.
I keep thinking maybe.
No.
I think that there's talent there.
Cleon, no. No.
You're
don't
killing
do it.
Me. I'm
no.
Wait, I want the finals to
nope.
be good this year.
Nope. Not this year. Maybe next year if KD leaves. Things get interesting next year.
It would be interesting.
I mean, everybody's waiting for the Warriors to break up. So until then, They're the king.
And I'm sure KD's going to, first place he's going to look is to Salt Lake City to maybe play with Donovan Mitchell.
Of course.
Who wouldn't want to play with him and Rudy?
He's already looking for property up in Holiday or something like that.
This has been the Jazz Notes podcast. I think I'm going to go to Wednesday night's game. I think I'm going to go to the Clippers game Wednesday night. Hopefully I can get someone there to talk to me at the game and talk a little bit more about the Jazz. So we'll have another podcast this week. That's coming up a little bit later. Thanks a lot for listening, downloading, subscribing. Jeremiah, anything you want to say on the way out?
The Warriors are going to win the championship, Cleon.
I was hoping you'd say, like, just I'm on a dad or something.
Let's like everything else. Just the Warriors are going to win.
So boring.
I know it is. Yet the season's so fun.
It
Go
is.
Figure.
That's what's frustrating.
We have a lot to talk about, but we already know the outcome of the season. It's like watching pro wrestling. We know the outcome. Actually, it's even worse because we don't necessarily know that we know it's scripted, but we don't know the outcome. So it's actually worse than pro wrestling.
Were you a pro wrestling fan growing up?
I was a little bit into Hulkmania and stuff when I was little.
No.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't grow. By the time I was 8 or 9 years old, I had outgrown it. Like I was never into the Undertaker and all the new guys and stuff. But
hey, by the way, the Jazz and the Thunder have played 3 times this year.
Have they?
Yeah,
and the Jazz are 0-3.
And the Jazz are 0-3.
Wow.
Last game is coming up on March 11th. In Vivint Smart Home Arena.
The Jazz
so Monday
will get
night.
That one.
Yeah. So
not that it matters.
Probably not to the... Well, it may mean something to the Thunder. They've still got a tough 20-plus games
left.
Yeah,
and next time we need to talk about playoff ceiling for the Jazz. I'm afraid that they have a ceiling, and it's probably not what fans want to hear.
Playoffs? Okay. Thanks a lot, Jeremiah.
I'll save it for next time.
Okay, sounds good. That's coming up probably a week from today on the next Jazz Notes podcast. See you later.